Okay, so I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, so I'll start with that. Okay, so my interest in the relationship between wealth inequality and health arose out of the income inequality literature. And the income inequality hypothesis states that in addition to your own income being a powerful determinant of your health, the distribution of income in the jurisdiction within which you live may also be a powerful determinant of your health. Now, this area of research has been fraught with a great deal of debate about methodological considerations, the theoretical considerations in terms of the pathways or mechanisms through which inequality might affect health. And buried within this debate, there has been a call for studies of wealth inequality in health. And the reason for that is that wealth is far more unequally distributed than income. It's grotesquely unequally distributed. So this is what led to my interest in the topic. And so the purpose of my study was to explore the relationship between wealth inequality and health in a sample of rich countries. This is a very exploratory bivariate study, and the purpose is really just to start a discussion about wealth and distribution of wealth. So the first thing I want to talk about is just conceptualizing wealth and comparing it with income. So income is best viewed as a river or a stream of resources that flow into a household. So primarily in the form of wages, salaries, social security benefits, etc. Wealth is what you own. So that can include your savings, any investments in terms of stocks, bonds, mutual funds, what you own in terms of jewelry or art, your vehicle, all of that. And it's best viewed as a pond or a lake that you can draw upon in times of need. So river versus pond, that's how I kind of conceptualize them in my mind. Interestingly, the correlation between wealth and income is not as high as you might think. In most studies, it's in the 0.3 to 0.4 range, which isn't as high as you might expect. And some researchers actually conflate the two terms and use them interchangeably, which actually does a disservice to the study of disparities because they are two very distinct concepts. Wealth is... This is not working. There we go. Far more unequally distributed than income. It's been estimated that in the United States, 1% of the population owns 40% of the wealth. And if you want to think in terms of the Gini coefficient, which is often used to kind of capture inequality, Gini coefficients for income for countries usually range between 0.2 to 0.4, with the Nordic countries such as Denmark being at the 0.2 end of the distribution, and United States being at the high end of 0.4. Gini coefficients for wealth range from 0.55 to 0.8. So way, way more unequally distributed than income, with Japan being at the low end, and again, the United States being at the high end. Wealth is very interesting as a concept because it represents the assets that have been built up by past generations. So there's a great deal of inheritance of wealth that contributes to that lack of intergenerational mobility. It provides security and stability to households in the present. So if you were to lose your job, if you were to become ill and require health care, if you were to require emergency repairs to your home, it is often wealth that is drawn upon. And those households that have savings tend to weather financial difficulties much better. So you can see that it really provides stability. It also represents the future in terms of the ability to plan for your retirement and to invest in your children's education. Thank you. I also like to conceptualize it as a snowball rolling downhill. Those who have wealth are positioned strategically to take advantage of opportunities to amass more wealth. So to take advantage of investment opportunities, mergers, insider compensation in terms of stocks, all of those kinds of things. So those who have it can multiply it much more easily than those of us who don't have a lot. And there's been studies that have shown that the vast majority of the Forbes 400, the richest people in the world, 43% of those, a study in the mid-90s showed, 43% of those were born on home plate, meaning that they were born with enough wealth to rank in that top list without even doing anything. So in this sort of ideology of individualism, All you have to do is work hard, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. The data shows otherwise, that those who are born into wealth are far more likely to succeed. And Warren Buffett has also said, these people have won the ovarian lottery. And I kind of like that little, because it's true. It's luck or fortune in terms of the family you're born into. So when we think of this concept then of wealth, it's really not surprising that it would be a very powerful determinant of health. There's not a lot of research yet on the relationship between wealth and health, but the research that has been done has shown that it's just as strong of a determinant as income, if not stronger. Okay. So sociologists, that's my discipline, have argued that wealth more than income more accurately reflects differences in power, particularly political power, prestige, opportunities, and resources, which are all linked with health. Wealth provides those who have it with freedom, with flexibility, with leisure, and security, and all of these are linked with health. One of the main limitations in studying wealth is methodological. It's very difficult to get quality data on wealth. It's very difficult to get comparable data on wealth, and that's because each jurisdiction defines it differently. So there isn't widespread agreement on what the main components of wealth are and which ones should be included. And then theoretical considerations. I'm a sociologist, we love theory. And so we're always wanting to know, well, if wealth affects health and if its distribution affects health, what is the pathway through which that occurs? What is the mechanism? So for my dissertation, I've employed a political economy perspective. This, I feel, goes the furthest upstream. It addresses class relations, which is perfect for the study of wealth because we're talking about relations between those who own and those who don't. It also encapsulates ideology. So for example, the corporate ownership of the mass media, the ability to get one's message out to the masses is going to depend on one's wealth. So political economy is very good, I think, for a study of wealth because it looks at the causes. How does wealth become concentrated in the hands of a few? And also the consequences of wealth inequality. What does this mean for the health, not only of our population, but also of democracy? And it has been very interesting writing this at this point of time in terms of the economy and also just recent midterm elections here in the United States. I've been watching it very carefully from back in Canada and looking at, for example, campaign contributions and the relationship between those contributions and who gets elected. Okay, so moving on to data for my study. I got wealth data from a study that looked at estimating the level and distribution of global household wealth. So this group of researchers wanted to estimate the Gini coefficient for the entire world. And in doing so, they had to collect data from a number of developing and developed countries. So I took the data from 14 OECD countries that had complete balance sheet information for the year 2000. I then matched that to health data from OECD from the year 2000. So I'm just going to talk today about life expectancy and infant mortality, but I did use other measures of health, and I did use other measures of wealth inequality. So my findings. Again, I just want to stress, this is very exploratory, bivariate study. I found very high correlations between wealth inequality and both life expectancy, especially female life expectancy, and infant mortality. The unweighted study showed a correlation of 0.51 for infant mortality and negative 0.58 for female life expectancy. I then weighted by population size, which is what's recommended in the income inequality literature, and they went up to 0.84 for infant mortality, negative 0.85 for female life expectancy. So this is a scatter plot of the 14 countries, and this is life expectancy for both males and females. So you can see that Japan has the lowest level of wealth inequality and the highest life expectancy. And you can see that Spain and Italy form a little cluster that follows from there, which is surprising because in the income inequality literature, those two Mediterranean countries actually have high levels of income inequality. And then at the other end, we have Denmark and the US. Oh, that's okay. I don't want to talk too much about Denmark. It looks like in my study that it's a statistical artifact based on how they define households and how they value real estate. I could go on and on about that. It's very surprising that Denmark would have that high of a level of wealth inequality. The health outcomes are another story, and that's been written about extensively. Infant mortality, same general trend. We have Japan with very low levels of wealth inequality and very low infant mortality, and we have the US up at the other end of the distribution. Okay. So these were simple bivariate associations. I wanted to control for some other aggregate level variables to make sure that this wasn't that there wasn't attenuation after I controlled. So the first thing I did is I controlled for GDP per capita. This is done in all of the income inequality studies to make sure that the relationship isn't due to the level of economic development or prosperity in the country. So I controlled for GDP, no difference. Whoops. No difference in the correlation. Then I excluded the United States, which is the most unequal country, and this is recommended again in the literature that they are it's an outlier that can have an overly strong influence. So I excluded the US. There was a slight attenuation, but the correlations remained strong and significant. And then I controlled for a variety of macro political indicators. These included gender, labor, and welfare state variables. So things like female labor force participation rates, female representation in parliament, union density, social expenditures, so things like spending on pensions, spending on public expenditures on healthcare, etc. None of those made very much difference at all. It was actually quite shocking. I expected there to be very large attenuations. There was very little. So then what I wanted to do is to do some case studies of some of these countries to try and get a more in-depth understanding of why this relationship exists and why, for example, it's stronger, or not stronger, but that wealth inequality is associated with better health or worse health, depending which countries you're looking at. So when I looked at Japan and Italy and Spain, one of the things that stood out is that these are countries that have generous pensions, public pensions, especially Italy and Spain. At the time of this data, at the year 2000, Italy and Spain had net replacement rates at approximately 90%. And economists have argued that there may be some substitutability between private wealth and public or social wealth, and that does seem to be happening in some of these countries. The role of home ownership. Certainly in the more neoliberal countries, such as the US and the UK, home ownership has been promoted as a means of ensuring economic well-being in retirement. However, what this shows in an exploratory fashion is that the countries that do well have both high rates of home ownership and generous pensions. So just having home ownership isn't enough to protect people. Cultural factors. So for example, in Italy and Spain, home ownership rates are high, but that's because of the strong role of the family and the concept of patrimony. Young adults tend to live at home until they get married, and upon marriage, they tend to have access to home ownership through the family. So there's probably a mechanism where the family affects both wealth inequality and health. Wealth taxation. The countries that have the lower levels of wealth inequality tax wealth and capital gains. So there's likely a role for wealth taxation as well in both of those mechanisms. Regulatory frameworks. Italy and Spain have very large down payment requirements when you buy a home. So at the time of this data, the down payment requirement in Italy was 50%, and loan to value ratios are very low compared to the Western countries. And so what I've been arguing in my dissertation is that while it's important to talk about private wealth, we also need to talk about social wealth or public wealth. So just, how am I doing for time?
3 minutes.
Okay, so a few final comments then.
Oh, yes.
So strengths and limitations. The strength of the study is that it's one of the first to look at the relationship between wealth inequality and health. Very, very few studies have addressed this. The main limitation, of course, is that it's a small sample of countries. And so a direction for future research then is to include a larger sample of countries and to get quality data that's comparable so that we can construct multi-level models. So we can include both the individual level data and the aggregate level data. And policy implications, as I've mentioned, I think it's important to talk about and measure private wealth, but to also have a conversation about public and social wealth. And in my discipline in particular, in sociology, we spend a lot of time drawing poverty lines. How much is enough for people to survive to meet basic needs? And what I'm arguing in my dissertation is that we should also have a conversation about how much is too much and what that means in terms of wealth taxation. And that's these are conversations that are happening right now in the United States about raising taxes above a certain threshold of income. And I think it's an interesting time to be doing this kind of work. I'll just say that. Thank you.